On the last episode of Up and Vanished, Payne Lindsay tackled the Lindbergh kidnapping, the crime of the century, the mysterious disappearance of little baby Lindy. This tragic crime inspired prolific author Agatha Christie to write her 1934 novel, Murder on the Orient Express, soon to be 20th Century Fox's newest feature film. On this episode, Payne Lindsay sits down with the cast of Murder on the Orient Express to talk about true crime. This is Up and Vanished.
Daisy Ridley, probably best known as Rey in Star Wars The Force Awakens, plays Miss Mary DeBenham in Murder on the Orient Express. She's also a self-proclaimed fan of podcasts, but even more so, true crime in general. While talking about podcasts, we got into how the exploration of these cases brings to light real gritty issues in our criminal justice system. And honestly, it was cool to see how much our thoughts aligned on this.
So you listen to podcasts?
Yes.
What's your favorite podcast?
Well, I have to say my dad wrote a porno because I was featured on it.
Were you?
Yeah.
That is a good one.
It's a great one, and the guys are really nice. Actually, I say I love podcasts. I don't listen to them that much, but Serial. Serial was the one that got me onto podcasts about Adnan Syed. Because I was re-talking about Making a Murderer the other day, and I think I wouldn't have watched that if I hadn't have listened to Serial. Much like this, why do people do the things they do? And who did it?
Right, exactly. Right? What is it about these true crime mysteries, these unsolved murders, that draws people in, do you think?
I think there are certain ones that show, that they're sort of like a, not a microcosm, but they're sort of a, Making a Murderer is a clear expression of the judicial system being unfair or unfairly weighted against people who either don't have much money or people who don't sort of have the circumstances to bring other people in that might give light to their cases. And I think now with people being able to film so much of what happened, there are so many discrepancies with what people say happened and what actually did happen. Airlines being a good example of things now we're seeing face to face, and people, regardless of what you're, it's always the why. Why is this happening? So I think uncovering, and also a lot of the time people are judged wrongly. And I think in life, everybody judges everyone wrongly based on appearance or race or gender or anything. So to watch something where someone is fighting for justice to be served in the right and proper way, I think will always be interesting.
With these days, with all these different mediums for content, podcasts, different series, Serial, for example, Anon's getting a retrial. Mm. Making a Murderer, the whole nation kind of rallied behind, this police department is really screwed up. Mm. And in Up and Vanished, which is my podcast, it had a similar effect on the real-life case. What do you think is the power of these new mediums and the accessibility of all these things in real-life cases, and where do you see that going?
I think it's wonderful in that when you listen to Serial, and you're like, wait, this doesn't make sense. It's wonderful that now people have a platform so that they can be heard correctly. Whether he did it or not, you need to have a trial with the correct information, with a lawyer who's actually doing fully what they can to defend their client. But then it's also sort of a shame because you think, how many Stephen Avery's are there? So many who are locked up for the wrong reason. And accused because of factors that they can't control. So it's sort of sad too, because one in however many cases will be given the light of day, and there are other people who are probably still suffering because they've been judged wrongly.
In what I'm doing right now, it went from me just doing a story on this cold case to this real moral compass thing. And you said the term moral compass earlier. And I wanted just to talk to you about that, because I've also recently used that term a lot, and what I have to rely on at the end of the day, because it's not really about making this story anymore as much as it is doing the right thing with this real thing that's going on in the world.
I think basically the first sit-down conversation I had with Ken was about moral compasses, and we were talking about me, and I'm the person that's always like, I'm the person that doesn't let the joke get too far, so I'm probably like, ugh, the buzzkill. But it it's like, I think the lines are always so thin that somebody has to be accountable, always, always. And the minute someone feels uncomfortable or something, that's not right. Like, what's happening is not right, regardless of whether you agree with it or not.
Do you like true crime, the genre of true crime?
Yes, I do. And I think also just thinking about it, not only do I love true crime, I actually like true anything. Like the OJ thing, yes, for an example. It's that fascination of both with the documentary and with the series. Both times you're like, you're trying to figure out why the people are doing the things they are and why the nation felt the way they did. And obviously with race relations and where we were in the world at that time, it like suddenly you're seeing so many different things that add to one decision. It's always like a domino. But even I love like, which is slightly different, but surgery, like botched surgeries. And you're like trying to, why do
like
people...
watching surgery?
Yeah, you know, and it's a botched one, and they're trying to figure it out. Yeah. Because also it's a psychological thing of why are you trying to change yourself? And you see the reasons why people make these decisions. And suddenly it's like affecting your entire life and your family and your friends. Like, I guess, any decision we make.
I appreciated how Daisy says she loved true anything. Fiction is awesome, but there's something fascinating about knowing that what you're watching or listening to is based in reality.
What do you think it is about a murder mystery that just draws people in so much?
Because it's a bit of feel of danger, and it's something you don't want in your life. But to see it, it makes you feel some danger around you.
That's Sergei Polunin, a dancer and actor from Ukraine. I couldn't have said it better myself. The feeling of danger is part of what drives interest in true crime. There's a reason Christie picked crime as the core theme for her novels. It's exciting, it's chilling, and most of all, it feels possible. In the first episode of this series, I went over the Lindbergh kidnapping, which inspired Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express. I spoke to Willem Dafoe about how real cases like Lindbergh influence fiction. And on the other side of the coin, how media like Up and Vanished influenced real life cases. He brought up a good point. True crime is an exercise of the imagination. On either side, investigator or listener, you can't shut off your mind, your thoughts, or your imagination. How could someone get away with this crime? You have to be able to put yourself in other people's shoes and imagine all scenarios.
Do you know much about the Lindbergh story?
I know only the degree that I know about Bruno Hauptmann. I know about the latter. I know about the case. Yeah.
And it being, you know, part of the inspiration for this novel.
Clearly.
Yeah. So the reason why I'm asking that is because I have a true crime podcast, which I'll just explain what that is. It's basically I'm investigating this cold case in South Georgia. Unsolved missing woman from South Georgia. Uh-huh. It's a real case.
Yep.
And I just went in there, going through files, calling people in this small town, and it's a serialized thing where episodes come out every 2 weeks, and it's been following this journey. And since this podcast came out, it's actually affected the real-life case.
Do people call into you to give you more information?
They do, yes. Yeah. So I talk to locals, experts, just kind of, it's just a real amateur investigation. And I saw a real sort of parallel between viewers of this movie wanting to be the detective and trying to figure out what's going on and my podcast where people are just drawn into the idea of wanting to solve something.
Right. I also think it's a test of, you know, of the, it's kind of an exercise of the imagination of who they could be and what they were capable of, to what degree they project onto either the victim or the murderer. It is like a game, and it is a exploration of self, strangely enough.
It is. Everyone has their own ideals and their own it's something that people get, I mean, the listeners of my podcast get really up in a fuss about certain things because it's their morals.
Give me an example.
It's like they feel strongly certain ways about different things, and it's like a religion or something. It's a core belief, not just a thought.
Right. And how? So they call into you these tips or their opinions?
I talk to different people who are real associates of this person in the real case, real suspects, real persons of interest, and I talked to everybody in this case, and we try to figure out who did it. And I saw a strong parallel there. I was just thinking, you know, in your opinion, why do you think people are so attracted to a murder mystery? What about it enthralls people so much?
It's somewhere between, you know, testing their being able to read situations and people and identification and reflection on human nature. Because when you're presented with, let's say someone aggresses someone else, they kill them or something, and you don't know who it is besides the technical clues, which are like a puzzle, there's also that thing that you mentioned about they have to kind of identify with the killer to try to imagine how they did it. And that's interesting. It's a game of the imagination. It's kind of an exercise in if my life was different. It's what actors do sometimes. They take on a different set of circumstances, a different set of motivations, and they imagine a scenario. So it's it's a way to it's a brain teaser. It's but with a heart, because they have a stake in it.
This is Manuel Garcia Rulfo, who you might know from The Magnificent Seven or Cake.
Are you familiar at all with the Lindbergh story of how this, the missing baby, and kind of the inspiration for this
film?
Oh,
yeah, definitely, yeah.
So I have a true crime podcast, and I've kind of seen some similarities in the true crime element here. It seems like some of the best movies.
You're that guy.
Huh?
You have like a very successful everybody crime.
It's an investigative podcast.
Oh, that's so cool, man. Nice meeting, man.
Cool, man. Yeah. It's a pretty crazy thing.
Yeah, of course.
But it seems like some of the best novels and movies in the mystery space are a lot of times derived from true crime stories. So it's like the basis makes for a better story. So I was curious your thoughts on that, if you felt similar or if you could see that being the case in a film like this as providing for a basis for a good mystery that's fictional.
Well, I think it's, like you say, I think that triggers everything, you know, the true events. I remember reading Capote, you know, the cold, what was the name of the novel? The cold, whatever. Anyways, but I don't know. I'm fascinated by these crimes and these true crimes and how, you know, an artist can bring it to a, you know, can be the seed of to write a great story, a great novel. I think that's what she did. Yeah.
Are you a fan at all of true crime?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I am. I am very intrigued. That's why I'm like, it's nice meeting you.
Tell me more about that, because I'm curious. I have a podcast. I'm going to use segments of this for my podcast listeners.
It's you know, I don't know why. It's just like something that intrigues me. I think everybody's into, like, if you see a documentary of...
The fact that it's real.
That is real. It's just, and you know, the murders or the assassins or whatever, it's just, it intrigues me what's going on inside of their...
You mean like the killers or the suspects?
Yeah, the killers.
Like
the
behavior and everything.
The behavior and everything is very...
it's intriguing, like, what a human is capable of to me.
Exactly, yeah.
It can be scary, but...
Do you know this TV series on Netflix? What's the name?
Making a Murderer?
Making a Murderer.
Yes.
So good.
Do you think he did it?
I don't know. You know, sometimes while I was watching the whole thing, I'm like, oh, he definitely did it. He definitely. And then you know,
and
some of them
maybe
like,
he didn't.
Oh shit, maybe he didn't. You know, I think that's the beauty of it. But so good. Yeah.
It was amazing to me how much of the cast was legitimately into true crime. Part of it, of course, is that they're immersed in their own work and their subject matter. But beyond that, multiple cast members brought up things like Making a Murderer and Serial. They were real fans. It was great talking to Josh Gad because he was especially passionate about this. Not to mention, he's a pretty funny guy. Gad was well-read in Christie's work and very interested in all the parallels between fiction and reality. He also has some interesting things to say about podcasts in general, especially how people, including myself, start to feel ownership over true crime cases. The more they listen and invest emotionally, they become armchair experts.
Were you an Agatha Christie fan before this?
I was. I haven't read everything. I had read Murder on the Orient Express. I had read And Then There Were None. I had seen the early films. But delving into it in this way was a completely thrilling experience, especially under the direction of Kenneth Branagh.
What is your favorite podcast?
Well, I love yours. Right now, I'm really into Love It or Leave It, because John Lovett is a close friend of mine. Pod Save America is another one that I absolutely love. Just basically because I'm a political junkie. But the whole podcast thing is very new to me. I actually didn't even know how to listen to podcasts until recently. I feel like an old man.
When did you figure it out? Because I'm pretty new, too.
Yeah, I figured it out within the last 6 months. I was not an avid podcast listener. My friend Rory O'Malley, who I did a Book of Mormon with and who's currently in Hamilton playing King George, he sort of introduced me to it because he started his own podcast. And, I've been on them in the past and I've always loved doing them, but I never really understood the logistics of listening to them on my iPhone. Because I'm like I said, I'm an old man. I have two little girls and, the level of expertise for me is downloading preschool games. So it was eye-opening, and now driving through traffic in L.A., it's a great outlet to just expand my mind and hear different takes on really cool things.
Have you ever considered making your own podcast?
I've thought about it. I don't really know what it would be about. Like, I don't have a distinct point of view on any one issue that I feel would be compelling enough.
Which could be cool, though.
Right. Just sort of ADD,
hey, this is
the
me
podcast.
Today, how I feel about these things. Tomorrow I feel different.
Hey, this is Josh Gad. I want to talk to you about the fact that I have no point of view about anything today, and I hope that you'll go on this sort of ADD journey with
me. I'm subscribed. Yeah,
okay.
I'm down.
Great.
Do you like true crime podcasts?
I like your true crime podcast. I don't listen to others, and I'm not just saying that because you're here, although I would say that to another host if they were sitting in your place.
You could be lying.
But I'd be lying to them. I'm not lying to you.
Okay.
I like true crime itself. I think I said to you in my last interview, my favorite book ever is Devil in the White City by Eric Larson, which I think you've read. And, there's something about true crime that is so fascinating and piques all of our interest and continues to in various forms. Making a Murderer, I think, became such a big hit because that genre is still so ripe. Solving a crime, leaving it up to the audience to determine who's guilty and who's innocent, when everybody can weigh in, it's really interesting.
It sucks you in. It's like...
It does suck you in. What did you make of Making a Murderer? Who do you think did it?
I'll be honest with you. I think he did it.
Yeah. I tend to agree.
Right?
I tend to agree.
But Brendan Dassey?
No.
See, he's the wild card. I think that he may have been...
Put up
coerced.
To it. Yeah. I agree.
But, I mean, just too many things.
See, this could be our podcast.
It could be.
Me asking you questions and then either agreeing or disagreeing.
See, I usually, like, I'm not the kind of guy who's like, oh, he didn't do it.
Right.
I feel like most of America is on the he didn't do it train.
But it is weird.
I'm kind of like, walks like a duck, talks like a duck. Might be. I don't know. But
yeah.
Stephen Avery, I mean... Looks like he might have done it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I agree. This podcast is going to be great, you and I.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of it, we should make a podcast together.
Let's do it.
Let's solve a crime or something.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's commit a crime and then solve it.
Right, but we don't know who committed it.
No.
So it's like,
I hope one of us knows if we were both involved, but the audience doesn't.
Or pick a crime that no one knows you committed a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then
just sort of...
Right.
Like, I stole G.I. Joes from my best friend for years.
That's messed up.
I know. And I just admitted it to him recently. And it didn't go well. I thought he'd be like, oh, no worries.
G.I.
Like,
Joes?
They were like Star Wars figures and G.I. Joes. And I'm like, these are great. They belong with me.
You didn't, like, see them at your house or something?
No, I hid them very well.
Where'd you put them?
It's none of your business.
Okay.
I'll reveal that when I'm ready to.
Okay, so...
But, yeah, but I admitted it to him, and he was really angry. He's like, those were probably worth a lot of money.
Yeah, you probably sell them for a lot of money on eBay.
I told him I'll give him cash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, why do you think that some true crime documentaries and podcasts now are having such a huge effect on the real-life cases?
I think that there's a number of reasons. I think that in the age of social media, there's a level of engagement that's happening and a level of, you know, everybody being connected. And so at any given time, somebody can listen to something and go, oh my God, I live in this town, or I've met this person, or I've seen that car, or I, you know, and when you add all of those pieces up, it almost gives you a sense of authority. It almost makes you feel like an expert yourself, like you have something to contribute. You and I were just talking about making a murderer. None of us have investigated this crime.
No.
Yet both of us have a very distinct take on who did it.
We're very entitled to our
opinions. We're very entitled. We're very entitled. And I think, the age of Twitter and social media in general has made everybody an armchair expert. And I think that feeds into the whole genre, because it gives everybody a sense of entitlement, a sense of ownership, and a sense of responsibility.
I agree. With your career in film, have you ever considered possibly being an executive producer on some sort of true crime documentary?
No, I mean, I would welcome that. I think, you know, the question becomes, is there a good reason to do it? Is there a compelling reason to do it? If I felt like I could lend my credibility to something that felt different, distinct, useful, then in a second, in a heartbeat, I would.
So more so about the real life part of it, not so much the...
Yeah, I mean, I love this idea of these unsolved crimes. In particular, I love the idea of potential vindication in some cases. My sort of level of interest, though, tends to go back even further. I love, you know, like I said, with Devil in the White City and Jack the Ripper and things like that, I love sort of these crimes of the century that are still in many cases unsolved, that go back in some cases over a century. To me, there's something so incredibly compelling about the fact that these things happened and over the course of generations, still with all of the assets and tools that we have not been solved.
Yeah, it's wild.
Lucy Boynton brought up a really great point when I sat down to talk to her. The thing that makes crime thrillers so chilling is that the monsters in these situations are people. It's terrifying to know that there are people out there capable of such heinous acts. And that's why Murder on the Orient Express is so scary. The idea that a stranger could be a killer in disguise is unsettling.
It seems like some of the best novels out there and best movies in the mystery space are oftentimes derived from some sort of true crime or some sort of true story. And the genius in this film is what she did, or this book, is what she did with that little tidbit of a true story. I was curious, do you think that sometimes truth is stranger than fiction, and, you know, does it make for better fiction if it's derived from something that was true sometimes?
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. And, I mean, this is why this film and this story is so appealing, because it's a story about human experience. Rather than fearing some kind of monster or alien something, the scariest thing is actually people and the unpredictability of strangers. And so, especially in the case that inspired this story, it's the unpredictability of someone that you never engaged in your own life and the impact that has and the repercussions that has in a much wider and broader way than you first see when you first look at a case like that. I think it's so much more interesting. And just to look at the way that people function and the way that people can carry out something like that or respond to something like that, those are the stories that are the most interesting.
Yeah. in the podcast that I do, it's a real case that I'm going back and reinvestigating, and it's happening in real time, and it's kind of had an effect on the real life case, and things have changed in the real world outside of this podcast because of this. And listeners kind of feel like they're in on the investigation too. And I feel I see a parallel here between the podcast and this movie where as a viewer, you almost want to become the detective and you're trying to figure out what's going on. What do you think? Why are people so drawn to murder mysteries like that, do you think?
I guess it just is the, again, it's kind of the fear of people and fear of what they're capable of. And so, I like with all of Agatha Christie's books, she really takes you on that journey in a very personal way. So you feel very close to everything as it unravels. And so I think if you've never experienced anything like that, there's nothing more kind of terrifyingly fascinating than wanting to get inside of the mind of how that happened and then kind of unravel all of the kind of clues that lead up to the result in a way.
Yeah, it's like you don't want it in your life, but you want to get close enough just to figure out why, like just to make sense of it or something.
Yeah, it's that crude fascination.
Yeah,
with
definitely.
Things that scare us.
Yeah.
I also got the chance to speak to the legendary Judi Dench and Derek Jacobi. Crazily enough, they actually both were born in the 1930s and grew up hearing about the Lindbergh kidnapping.
So I have a true crime podcast, and one of the cool things about this story is that it's kind of loosely derived from the Lindbergh kidnapping.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you guys were well aware of the Lindbergh kidnapping?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Happened when we were children.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you remember what that was like?
No, I don't
just
remember.
Just before.
Or based on what your parents told you?
Was it?
It was
something like
30s. It was 30s.
It was
30s. Yes, it was a while ago.
Early 30s.
I was born in 34.
And I was 38.
And so that it was very much talked about when I was a child. And so that must have been 10 years later or, you know, to even comprehend that your parents were talking about it.
It was like this mass fear. It seemed like everyone was kind of, if this baby could be kidnapped, anybody's baby could be kidnapped.
Sure.
And so it was kind of like a paranoid.
Very, very, very shocking.
One thing I like about this story is that as the reader and as the viewer now in this film, you kind of feel like you're the detective too a little bit. And I was curious your thoughts on what it's like to be the viewer and be the detective too, and if it makes for a better film that way.
I think that's what anybody does. If they either read a murder mystery or they see a film, they want to be part. You want to be part detective, and you want to kind of pick up clues all the time. And you don't. And the very, very good film is, of course, that you absolutely have no idea, and your summing up is probably wrong.
What is it about the mystery that draws people in?
I think what Judy said, that you are part of it, that you are not.
You want to outwit the writer
yes,
in a way,
yes,
don't you?
Yes.
You want to be able to think, oh, I know who's done this.
Everyone thinks that they know.
They know. Oh, I know who's done.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
That's the excitement, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Speaking of being the detective, Kenneth Branagh showed off his investigative skills by analyzing me during our interview. I could tell that he definitely did his research when getting into his character, Detective Perrault. Branagh is really the mind behind this film, not just as the brilliant protagonist, but also as the film's director. Hearing his perspective on true crime, Agatha Christie, and Murder on the Orient Express was fascinating. I could tell that he was truly a fan of her work. He talked about why being a sleuth is so appealing. Deep down, I've always felt the want to find closure, the need to solve.
If you're a detective in an interview with someone investigating a crime, there is a level of concentration, a level of perception and focus that you need in order to see what that nod of the head or that blinking or what your foot's doing now or the way your hands are, etc., indicative of guilt, indifference, whatever. And if I'm watching that for a performance as well, I need to be able to say, no, you need to just relax that side of your jaw or whatever, and you need to whatever, just let your shoulders drop back a bit, etc.
And so what's your read on me?
Yuri, I think very together. You feel very, it feels like you're quite natural in this scenario. I think you really know your subject as well, so you have a quiet confidence, which is good. And yeah, I would say there's a contained, passionate quality that is underneath a civilized exterior.
What can you tell me about the Lindbergh story and how it relates to this film and the inspiration for the book?
Well, Agatha Christie was, you know, very literate about crime and the criminal world, fascinated and very, very widely read, very, very articulate and expansive woman of the world, but very much a sort of pioneering feminist individual, first woman to learn how to surf in Hawaii on an incredible trip she went around the world with her first husband on. The Lindbergh case captured the imagination of the world because it seemed that a perfect golden couple and symbolic of American success and of the perfect family and of the American dream could be so destroyed by this unthinkable, unspeakable act, this kidnap and then this murder of their child. It seemed to be a case that absolutely captured the imagination of the nation. And was very personal to people. It's one of those occasions when a national event involving people you don't know, but you may think you do, really gets to the hearts, souls, minds of an entire nation. And so it was with that. And with the case of the Armstrongs in Murder on the Orient Express, that world is evoked, and the power of that story and the tragedy of that story is a powerful motor for what underlies in certain hands the possibility of revenge for that terrible act.
Do you think that stories like that, the true story of the Lindbergh case, those sort of things make for better fictional stories as the being derived from something? I mean, obviously the genius is behind making this elaborate story around this particular incident. Mm-hmm. But I feel like some of the best mystery novels and movies out there are in some way often derived from something that's true. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about what you thought about that.
I think it's interesting that what Christie caught here was the phenomenon of fascination that particular stories can have. In our own country, there's the Madeleine McCann disappearance you may be aware of, which is a tragic disappearance of a girl whose whereabouts have never been found. It's now 10 years since she was gone.
You have a podcast on a missing woman from South Georgia. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking for tons of cases, and I've started to look in the UK a little bit since I've been here.
Yeah, but the McCann case is fascinating because also it provokes all sorts of passions and judgments. And I think that Christie recognized that there are cases so emotive in the hearts of folk that they feel they really have a personal stake, so that the nation is on the edge of its seat.
In the podcast I have, it's called Up and Vanished. I'm following a real-life case from South Georgia, and everyone seems like a suspect. So I see a lot of correlations between your film and this real-life case. How do you feel? Why are people so obsessed about mysteries and getting into the detective mode and almost wanting to be the detective themselves?
I think there is a desire for closure. You know, people want, sometimes they want just a neat ending to things, and sometimes that temptation or that absolute addiction to the ability to follow through on some lateral thought, or in the case of some puzzles, the thing that's staring you in the face. And so there's just a natural human instinct to solve.
Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back next week with another episode focusing on the movie-making magic behind Murder on the Orient Express. Bane Lindsay will reveal more interviews with the cast, including a few exciting new additions to the lineup. Stay tuned to Up and Vanished,